Welcome to Intimacy, Choreography, and Conversation, where Ann and Carly talk candidly about the growing world of intimacy choreography and shifting performing arts spaces towards a culture of consent.
We acknowledge and honor the Tongva peoples as the traditional caretakers of the land we currently reside on and are recording this podcast on. That is the Los Angeles Basin and South Channel Islands.
And welcome back. This is part two of our two-part episode on careers in intimacy. Next question. How can one be trained and certified in being an intimacy director slash coordinator in this time? Any recommended resources?
All right. Yes.
Break it down, Carly. Break it down.
Okay. I'll start to break it down, but you got to help me break it down.
All right.
So certification, getting trained and certified is, I think, a really common question that comes up pretty much anytime I've done this work. And my particular stance is for qualification over certification. And essentially what I mean by that is that, especially if you're someone who's looking to hire an intimacy director, or if you're someone who's looking to become an intimacy director, to look at somebody's qualifications. What is their like holistic experience? What do they bring to the table? What have they done before? What are they, what have they been trained in, et cetera, rather than only accepting this work from folks who have been certified through a specific program. And I know that will be controversial to some folks and exciting and relieving to other folks. But that's something that I really stand by, because I think when there is just one or two specific paths or programs to certification, you can lead to, we can run into gatekeeping and inaccessibility. And I think that especially as we are trying to expand and diversify this field, that it's really important to just look, as I said, holistically about, is somebody qualified to do this work? Do they have one particular stamp on their resume or sheet, but what is the whole of what they bring to it? I am not a certified intimacy director through any particular group or program. I have a lot of training and experience that comes from a bunch of different places, and I bring that all to the table when I do my work. And so I think if you are, I'm not saying this to like endorse, oh, just hire anybody who says they're an intimacy director. That's very dangerous because, as we've mentioned a bunch of times in this episode, this is really vulnerable work. So I think you need to do your due diligence and do some research, maybe ask for a referral, see who they've worked with before, see what kind of training and experience they have. But I really believe in my heart that it should not come down to a stamp of approval or a check mark. Do you have it or not? And that means you get to do the work or not. I'll step off my soapbox now. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Well, okay. Let me step on it. I'm stepping on it now. I couldn't agree more. I think the word certification is a charged word that is steeped in patriarchy.
Woo!
And I'm going to tell you why I believe that, if it's not very clear. When you talk about certification, oftentimes a financial responsibility comes with attaining that certification. Location actually has a lot to do with certification, especially in this industry. Also, it is kind of a social understanding of who gets to be certified and who doesn't. And also the process to that certification in this industry is unclear. So unless there is some sort of accrediting board that approves a certification, I don't think that that is necessarily the benchmark for doing the work. Carly mentioned qualification. because people are coming from all walks of life into this industry. And some people have decades of experience directing. They have decades of experience doing fight choreography or movement technique like Laban, Viewpoints, Feldenkrais, Alexander. They have experience. They're coming with a bag of experience. And so to put all of that down and do a certification that is could last for years and cost, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000 once it's accumulated and added up, is just not a sustaining model. What we offer at Intimacy Coordinators of Color, because of that, and because we are often the last to be invited to the table in many areas of our country, is a qualification, meaning that our curriculum takes our trainees through a series of national certifications that apply to the training that is approved by the EEOC. So if you've got the EEOC behind you and external certifications, plus the classes that we offer and what you bring to the table, I have no problem suggesting that the graduates of ICOC can be hired in any theater organization in the country. And that's what we're going with. I'm stepping off my soapbox.
Yeah. Beautiful. I think we're very in alignment with that. And I know that that's something that divides this industry and that folks have different feelings and big feelings mm-hmm. about that. But you know, this is just our thoughts and an opinion, and this, you know, again, comes from my thoughts and opinions come from my own personal, lived experience. And I just think a lot of folks will get written off or dissuaded from pursuing this industry. Folks who could be incredible assets to the intimacy field, if they feel like a specific certification is their only way. And they're like, that's not financially accessible. That's not physically accessible, et cetera. And we don't want to lose those people.
Yeah. With the certification, you have to keep up with it. So if I'm certified in 2020, am I still certified in 2025? Right. Do I have to take any kind of professional development in order to stay certified? Right. Or is it something where you just become certified and then that's it? And you just do the same thing over and over and over again without any supervision, without any desire or without any need for professional development, without any need to attend workshops that move the industry forward. It's very unclear. And, you know, that's, yes, I mean, on one end, you know, you've got great training out there. TIE is doing a wonderful job. There's a great book, Staging Sex, that is, you know, it is the tome of intimacy work, which is great to yes. have. You've got Carly, you teach classes, you're online, you're doing.
I do teach some Zoom intimacy classes. I'll list some new ones soon on my website, but I think it's interesting to mention that TIE also is a qualification over certification program mm-hmm. and they have accessible online classes as well right now. Mm-hmm. And also the book that Anne mentioned, Staging Sex, is from the leaders of TIE. It's written by Chelsea Pace with contributions from Laura Ricard. And so there's a lot of learning that is accessible right now. I think there actually, I believe we talked about this on the online episode, is that there's a bit of a equalizing in terms of accessibility is one kind of silver lining of everything moving online in this moment. Yeah. So you can still get your training on during this yeah. pandemic. And I think the other advice that I would have in terms of this is to lean into your own specialties. Always keep learning. But like anything that you can bring to the table from the fields of movement and choreography, sex education, identity, trauma awareness, all of those things are really worthwhile assets. For me, so much of what I bring to intimacy direction is from my experience as a director working with actors. So I think it's important not to discount experience that you have had that informs your work.
Right. I mean, if you plant a garden, do you plant just one seed? Do you plant one kind of seed? You don't. And do they grow beautifully together and offer different things to different people? Yes. Are they all nourishing one another? Yes. They're nourished from the same ground, it's from the same earth, but they all grow up individually. And that's the image that I like to work with. You know, it's great to have different voices in this industry, but what we can't do is gatekeep the industry by having a certification slapped on it.
Right. And as we've talked about definitely in this episode, that the industry of intimacy is so new, even though practices around consent and choreography as we work with actors are not new. But this industry itself is. And so I think what I was trying to say earlier was a problematic thing about certification is gatekeeping this early on while the industry is still figuring out, and this position is still kind of in the process of crystallizing into its fullness. Mm. I think I don't think that gatekeeping serves us in any way. I think that we need to make this field more accessible.
I do too. And especially since the industry is going to be calling for the need for more. That's all I have to say about it. Not getting way in it.
Right. Well, I agree that there is a call for more, because it's not like, okay, there's only a small amount of intimacy directors. So if you can't afford them, or specifically maybe certified intimacy directors, if you can't afford them, then you never get to do a play, or that we expect that everyone will just stop doing a play with any scenes of intimacy. That's not going to happen.
No.
So I think we need to meet and train the folks who are ready to show up through that and through different paths, whether they're different qualifications or certifications.
Yeah.
Beep, boop.
Okay.
You ready for another question?
You ready?
Great. Okay. Well, building on to the advice train, do you have any recommendations for practicing and keeping skills fresh despite social distancing?
Ooh, I like this. You know, what I would recommend is looking at all this great television. I mean, how many streaming channels do we have now? So
many good ones.
But there's so much good staged sex out there. I don't want to mention any, because then that means I'm going to leave some out. But if you can look online, you can see that there are more articles coming out about sexual intimacy and choreographing and staging of it. And look for the shows that are listed. Okay, I got to mention one. I May Destroy You. Oh my God. Okay, that's all I'm going to mention. But that's one way for you to become more familiar with how scenes and the creativity can be staged. As far as, you know, looking into text, you can go several ways with that. You know, we mentioned the Kilroy Awards a few episodes back as a very healthy ground for text. You know, start getting those scenes of theater that you remember. Tennessee Williams is a great one to go to classically, you know, American classic anyway, that describe or give room for a scene of intimacy or sexual violence. So start, you know, getting those scenes in a notebook and start blocking them the way you would, start choreographing them, blocking them, notating them the way you envision them. And, you know, do one a week or watch a show or an episode a week about the craft, and just kind of keep your chops up for when that opportunity comes around to you.
That's really fun homework.
It is fun homework. I'm starting on a new show.
I love that. I would also agree with watch movies and TV, as many of us are doing anyways, as we're staying home a lot. And as you're doing that, you know, you can do this on a level from pretty passive to super active, whether you can just do it in your head or have a notebook, which I love. Start tracking and breaking down intimate scenes. Like, okay, how did they do it? If you were directing that, like what language you could use to describe that to help the actors find that? And also maybe how you would do it differently, or playing with, ooh, if I staged this like differently, even at a slower tempo or something, how would the meaning of that moment change in the storytelling? So that's absolutely a way that you can keep your skills fresh. And I also love that reading plays or scripts and like actually practicing. You could even, as we've talked about Zoom theater before on this podcast, you could explore intimacy on Zoom theater. You could also just explore with your own body in space, like maybe pick up a copy of Staging Sex and read some of the exercises, though many are with multiple people. I think there you can translate almost any of them to yourself. And I think it's can be a really great foundation to practice movement with yourself and with your own body. And have that personal visceral understanding of it to be in your toolbox for when you are able to get back into rooms with other folks. That's definitely something that I'm trying to work on in this time as a person who is very in my head more than in my body. I'm trying to really call on, okay, like how do I explore this even more in my own visceral meat suit, as I like to call bodies. They're a meat suit for our spirit. Explore with your own meat suit. Just like play with movement and touch on yourself, or maybe with someone in your pod that you live with, if you're in that situation.
Agreed. And I love the idea of finding your own language to notate and using your own kind of coding system. There are great coding systems that stage managers use, and that might be a helpful jumping off point for you to be able to notate your work. You know, things like upstage, downstage, through, in, out, exit, enter. All of those have coded symbols that you can use, and your stage manager will love you. They have to do so many things, you know. Yeah. Let's give them props up for stage managers.
Oh my gosh. We
love the best. You.
Essential. We love you very much. Oh, one more thought. You can also borrow, as you're exploring, like, how do I translate ideas of movement into language that can then be translated back into movement? Because in intimacy direction, we don't want to go up and physically shape and push and pull and mold the actors with our hands. We don't do that. So we do have to have language that we can really communicate clearly about movement. So you could draw on language that you know or are familiar with from other kinds of choreography or movement work. Like viewpoints is a really incredible, just solid foundation way to talk about language of tempo, duration, spatial relationship, distance between bodies, et cetera. So I think that's a really useful tool for this work.
Yes. And also, TIE does this level of touch idea, you know, where you're, you know, feather touch, paint touch, you know, sculpting touch of how tightly you hold another person based on these artistic terms. And it's just beautiful and clear. So anything that you can find to help your actor through that choreography is going to be really essential to them delivering what you and the director envision.
Yes, I love that TIE descriptor. I think it's powder, paint, and clay, like the kind of intensity of pressure. And it's never actually like squeeze a person like they're clay, but it's like feeling into the metaphor of that kind of touch. And that that really inspires me to think, okay, how else could I describe movement? Because different actors, different artists respond better to different things. And so the visceralness of those like physical artistic mediums is something that makes my brain really sparkle.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Sparkle.
Sparkle. All right. We're getting close, man. We're getting close.
Yeah, only a couple more questions.
Okay. I have a question for you.
All right.
Any advice on how to kickstart intimacy direction in your area, especially in an area that doesn't understand its importance to the production process yet?
Ooh, yes. And there are lots of areas that don't understand the importance of this process yet. I think a great way, my advice would kind of depend on like, are you an intimacy director trying to like get your theaters in your area to take this seriously? Are you a director or an artistic director? But I think something you can do is reach out to theaters in your area and say, hey, if you're an intimacy person specifically, you can say, I just wanted to, I notice maybe that this play is later in your season in the future times, you know, when we will have seasons again. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm an intimacy director and this seems like a script where there might be a need for that. And like, this is why this work is important. And I just want to let you know that my services are available to start reaching out to theaters, especially like artistic directors in your area. If you have that service to offer. And if you don't, you could even reach out. If you're a director, I think, and you're directing something that needs an intimacy director, I think that you have some power and clout to leverage to be like, I need an intimacy director for this process. Or if you're a producer and there has been an incident at the theater that you work in, you can leverage that and say, "We to do this production, we need to bring on an intimacy director." Those two circumstances are most of the times that I have been hired for this work, whether it's a director or producer who is saying, "This is an essential need for the production."
Right. That's great. And I think, too, you know, if you have an interest in reading through articles and information about intimacy direction, one thing you can do to kind of enliven the education about intimacy in your intimacy direction in your area is to post things on your social media, articles that you've seen or people in the know that you've seen kind of rising up through the intimacy world. You can also reach out to different Facebook groups that you belong to and say, hey, did you guys know about this? This is kind of a cool thing that's happening. And just organically and holistically infuse your social media with that information so that it shows up on the radar of people who may not even know about the industry yet, because it is really still very, very new. Another thing you can do is promote our podcast.
Yeah. Share these discussions with folks, especially if they haven't heard of what this industry is or don't have a clear idea of what this work might actually look like. I think that's a great resource. And also, since we are in the time of online education, there's a kind of a level of accessibility where, you know, mm-hmm. maybe instead of being like, oh, how are we going to get an intimacy director to fly out to our small city and do this workshop, reach out and schedule one online.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, the whole thing is about education right now. I think as we have this beautiful and remarkable and intense moment of being in electronic space together because we can't physically be together, it's an opportunity for us to share this work and to share information about this work with very little cost, very little expense. And I think that, you know, for those of us with the privilege of the internet, that we can do a lot to bring education to lots more people.
Amen.
Yeah, so that's how you can do it.
Yeah. And just kind of a callback to what I said earlier about meeting up with resistance. I think this is another, you know, if you are saying, hey, we really need to get this happening in our local theater communities, and there's resistance, I think that's another opportunity to call them in to being on the side of doing better with these kind of, with these we statements. And like, we want to make great art, we want to respect our artists, and really be on the edge of the theater making with real integrity. And here is an amazing path towards that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are they going to say? No, I don't want to make good art, and I don't want to respect my artists or work with integrity. Well, I think most people, if you give them a chance to join that team, will want to.
Yeah.
You put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question for you, Anne.
Okay.
Well, I guess for us, do either of you have bystander intervention training? And if you do, do you find it useful in your theater practices as intimacy directors?
I do not have bystander training. Only I've had just like a brief understanding of bystander training, to be honest. However, I'm very excited to announce that Intimacy Coordinators of Color is going to be embarking on a specific bystander training for the intimacy field very soon with an organization that I will probably tell you later when we have inked the deal. But for those of you who don't know what bystander training is, bystander training is this practice of making sure that everyone in the room feels validated and feels cared for and feels heard and respected. So for instance, if you see something in your workplace where a person is being bullied, or a person is being glossed over in a meeting, or a person being negated or microaggressed, there is a system called bystander training that helps you facilitate those moments. And for me, I feel it's very, very important for intimacy workers to have a knowledge of what it means to be a bystander in the room. Because, you know, the image that the practicality and the reality of the situation is that when you're in rehearsal, the intimacy director, in my case, is very quiet most of the time. We're observing, we're watching, we're holding space when it's not our time to be directing. So, mm-hmm. It's good for us to have those skills and be able to pick up on those nonverbal cues, be able to listen, be able to redirect, verbally violent behavior. I just think it's a great skill for us to have and for us to upkeep in the intimacy world.
Yes, I'm on a similar page where I have some foundational knowledge of it and have a couple trainings lined up. And I definitely want to take yours once that is all scheduled and worked out. I think one of the key words is that it's bystander intervention training. And so it's kind of like when you see something, you're not just standing by, you intervene. And so kind of an example of my understanding of it, just in terms of like street harassment or on public, in any public spaces. So like maybe you're on public transit in the before times and you see somebody being harassed. One tactic that you can do is, even if you don't know that person, go sit next to them and talk to them like they're your friend, or drop some coins right by their feet and pick that, you know, ways to derail the harassment that's happening. And that's just one of many, many techniques from that. And I think there's a lot of ways that could really translate powerfully into the rehearsal room. And I really resonated with what you said about how a lot of the times as an intimacy director, when we're in this space, unless we're doing our direct work, there is a lot of observing. And so I think there's a lot of instances where, you know, we might see something that, oh, I don't know how that feels. Or if you have a reaction, you're like, ooh, that I don't think that that is something that that person is having a positive experience with, to put it mildly, or if there's some kind of harassment or discrimination, and there's different ways to circumvent that from happening. For instance, maybe I'm in a rehearsal room and I, you know, if you hear somebody is misgendered, something that you could do is just speak out and correct them on the pronouns. If you're not sure, maybe something that you could do is to pull the person who is misgendered aside at the next break and say, like, hey, I just want to confirm that these are your correct pronouns. Would you like me to correct people out loud if they misgender you? And then they can say yes or no, depending on how they feel safe about being out in that space.
Yeah, that's a great example of bystander intervention. There are other things too that you can kind of help to develop your training as an intimacy director. I think we mentioned mental health and first aid, sexual harassment, trauma training.
Yeah, I did this really wonderful. I've done mental health first aid. Which is just a helpful foundational tool to have. And I did a training through the Trauma Resiliency Institute. They have, I think, two different trainings, the Trauma Resiliency Model and Community Resiliency Model. I was definitely like the only theater person there in a sea of social workers and therapists and psychiatrists. But it was an amazing experience, and it gave me some tools that I use as an intimacy director, like especially in terms of this concept of a resilient zone being a zone where you can ride the waves and handle things. But sometimes folks get bumped below or above the zone, and there's different ways of like grounding and tracking your own body and tools that you can use to bring yourself or help guide somebody back into their resiliency zone, which I've definitely used. There's even certain tools from that I use as part of de-rolling practices, especially for more intense scenes. So I think there's a lot of different supplemental trainings that can really feed into intimacy work. Definitely my training and experience as a sex educator is something that really informs what I do. There's a lot of pieces, especially in kink and BDSM, which is one of my favorite topics to teach about in sex education, that apply really beautifully, including one of my favorites is, and I don't know if this is too tangential, we can totally cut this out if it is, but just in divining how does BDSM or kink, how is that actually different from abuse? One is we're looking at consent, and the other is this idea that I learned from one of my sex ed mentors, V. Tobar, and they say, everyone gets to leave with all of their parts. Mm. And I really take that to heart, and I really bring that into intimacy work and any kind of acting work. If you're going to this really intense place, you get to take all the pieces of you back when you leave that rehearsal or performance space.
I love that. I love being whole. I love the idea that we are moving enthusiastically from one project to another as whole human beings. And that's so important, so that we can grow and we can get to the next project and be excited about that one as well.
Yes, we're whole people with a whole lifetime of creating. I don't believe that there's one project that is worth costing a part of your being, like sacrificing a piece of yourself.
Absolutely not. Okay, last question.
Last question.
Can you believe it? Episode 5, wrapping it up.
Woo-woo!
Okay, so here it is. Carly.
And?
What's your best advice for an aspiring intimacy director or coordinator?
Oh, wow. Okay. I guess it would be a kind of a multi-pronged thing, like a fork.
I like that. I really like prongs. Okay.
Prongs. It's a fun word to say. Prong. I would say lean into your own specialties and your own unique like sparkles and passions. I think that as we're talking about wholeness and individuality, that I think everybody has, anyone who does this work has something to offer that only they can offer in the wholeness of all the plants that are growing in their garden. And so I think like lean into that, because nobody has the same light to shine that you have. So let it shine. I think that you have to care a lot about this work and really put yourself and your heart into it and really show up for the folks, especially the most vulnerable folks in the rooms that you're working in, and also have healthy personal boundaries and some personal de-rolling process after that work. Mm-hmm. Just like we're asking actors to like show up fully and then leave with their whole full selves, for it to be sustainable for any of us to do this work, we have to practice what we preach, which sometimes can be a challenging part, but I think is really essential. And finally, to be resilient, especially because this is a new field. It's still developing. It's still growing. We don't know exactly how it's going to shape. There's not always clear information or path. There's no, as we've talked about with our belief in qualification, I don't personally believe that there's any one path that's A, B, C, D, check, 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 check. I think you run into a lot of challenges in blocks and resistance and in feedback. And I think it's just really essential to be resilient, to practice active resilience in this work. And if you want to keep showing up, even when it's hard or a door is shut on you, or you make a mistake, you need to be resilient and learn from that and keep doing better and moving forward.
Those are all great things. Those are all wonderful. And, you know, I would say always remember that this is new work in a new industry. So feed yourself at the buffet of intimacy. There are many classes available. There are many ideologies available. And take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that, and find your own pathway through this. I think that if you are in a city that doesn't have intimacy training, once we, you know, back in the before times, you know, when it was actually happening on stages and screens, we are moving toward that again. So if you can make intimacy work normal in your community, that would be a great thing to land into once things get started again. So keep feeding the groups that you belong to. Keep researching, do your work, do your individual work as you see fit. Learn what notation is. Buy Chelsea's book, Staging Sex, and look and dive into that. Just fill yourself up with the information that is out there without attributing to any kind of ideology, and see where your path takes you. I have a sense that there are going to be more organizations that work within the intimacy field and industry. The only thing I could hope is that they will be moving toward qualification and moving toward a safe space for actors to work and for producers and directors to be involved in the conversation as we build this industry. We don't want to ostracize anyone. We want to be inclusive. We want to embrace people from all walks of life. And so when you're doing your research and you're finding more and more out about this, try to hold space for individuals that may not be traditionally thought of as being in scripts and texts and TV shows and theater, you know, the marginalized people. Think about them and think about how you can bring this work into their stories.
Amazing. I love everything that you said. And I think the feed yourself at the buffet is really going to stick with me. Like I just really dig food metaphors in garden metaphors. And yeah, I love that. There's a lot of information available from a lot of sources. And I think that's really fantastic to just like, let yourself sample a little bit of everything and let it create your own flavor palette that aligns with your personal integrity and way of working. That's feast at the buffet.
Yes.
don't give up. Keep learning, keep doing this. There is a need for more folks who are doing this work, and it's just going to keep growing. So, we got this.
100%. We got it. Well, and, there's the close of episode 5. I can't believe it.
Wow.
That was a big one. That was a big one. And, check out Carly's classes that she's got coming down the pipeline. Check out intimacycoordinatorsofcolor.com. Check out TIE and all the amazing work that they're doing, and just fill yourself up with this training.
Yes. Delicious, delicious. Have a delicious buffet of training.
We will.
If you listening right now, have any questions about intimacy choreography, direction, consulting, or just the intimacy field in general, please send them to our email, which is the letters ic.annandcarly@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at the letters ICIC_AnnandCarly, where we will be posting info about upcoming episodes and other intimacy related tidbits.
And as usual, we'd also like to pop, pop, pop our sound designer, editor, and otherwise extraordinary person, David Gonzalez, and pop, pop, pop to our wonderful producer, Hazel Lozano. Music by David Gonzalez. The podcast logo is by Zach Brown.
Pop, pop.